the Rule of Threes Podcast. The Rule of Threes Podcast. It's the Rule of Threes Podcast with Chris and Casey.
It's the Rule of Threes Podcast. I'm Chris Grace.
I'm Casey Lawrence.
And we are coming to you live from our homes with another check-in. How you doing, Casey?
Checking in. Feeling good. Having a good couple of days. There's not much real basketball stuff going on other than there's a 10-hour commercial for Michael Jordan on ESPN.
Oh, that's right. This is like a 30 for 30 or something?
It is like a 30 for 30, but it is all based off new footage that our good friends at the NBA were so smart to record with Michael Jordan's permission of the last year that he spent in Chicago. On that dominant team that won their final championship for the city of Chicago.
Was this a 72-game team, or was that not that year?
I believe this was that team, yeah.
Ah, okay. Cool. I guess I should check it out, even though I don't really like Michael Jordan. I do respect what he brought to the game.
Yeah, I mean, I watched the first two episodes, and it's all like, it's good to have cool basketball content.
Yeah.
But it also just like... It doesn't feel groundbreaking yet to me.
Yeah. I think the most interesting thing about Michael Jordan is, especially if you can see footage of him in slow motion, how rarely his heels hit the ground on drives. It's just something to, if you think about you driving around somebody to make a layup, when you're making those two or three steps to try to go around somebody, a lot of those steps for professional players, they're only using the balls of their feet.
Yeah.
Which I don't think is the way we do it a lot of the time.
No, I mean, I'm not agile enough to live on the balls of my feet for a long period of time because, my ankles aren't that strong. And,
yes.
I'm not a professional athlete who spent his time building his quick twitch muscles in the gym.
Also, I think that we don't typically think about driving around somebody and being tilted at the same extreme angle that they are.
Oh no, that's just a recipe for me to fall on my face.
Yeah. So if you imagine driving, Casey, imagine we're on the court and you're going to drive to your right around me.
Okay.
I think a normal human being would, the sort of like the thing that you would turn that corner with eventually,
yeah,
would be that you like plant your right foot to sort of catch your weight and go around the person.
Yes.
A lot of the Jordan footage, you'll see him do that same move, but the outermost step is with his left foot.
Oh.
And he's on the balls of that foot, the ball of that foot coming back around, and his right foot is going back in and turning the corner already, if that makes sense.
Yes, got it.
So I think most normal human beings just wouldn't be comfortable going so skewed to like commit so hard to like a cut.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I know that, whenever I'm playing basketball, it is a lot of, I tried to do that, but I just couldn't get there.
Yeah. We also have to respect the fact that a lot of these moves are very heavily practiced.
Yeah.
In fact, the movie that we watched this week, we had a little demonstration of a step like that.
Yes, we did.
A little tactic that you could use. Say you were a street ball player,
uh-huh,
and you had a lot of pizzazz.
Yes.
But you couldn't somehow get around this 40-year-old white basketball coach.
Yes.
In like dress clothes.
Yeah, very handsome.
By the way, holding and grabbing you a lot.
Yeah, of course, because, white guys are allowed to do that by the Constitution.
Yeah. But what if that guy taught you how to do a thing called a rocker step?
Ah, like John Rocker, famous closer for the Atlanta Braves?
Right. Famous user of homophobic slurs. And yes. I believe, was he somebody that would, spit on people?
Yes, yeah, that's John Rocker for you.
If a middle-aged white coach showed that to you, Casey, would you go play for that coach's college?
Well, I don't know. Here's the question I have to ask. Is that coach going to tell me that, maybe I'm not as good as I think I am?
Ooh. I mean, I would expect to start, honestly.
Well, if I don't start, why'd you bring me here?
Plus, why would you bring me here not to play my game?
Yeah.
My style of game. Like,
well, what if we blended those two games together? Okay, so I think what we're getting here is that Glory Road, the movie that we watched as our basketball movie of the week, was Glory Road.
Had you seen this movie before?
I saw this movie in the theaters.
Okay, I had never even heard of this movie until you mentioned it.
Yeah.
And then it wasn't until about 10 minutes in that I realized it was about Don Haskins.
Yeah.
Because, I know him from watching college basketball because Texas Western ended up becoming UTEP, University of Texas at El Paso.
Yep.
I will say that one of the the things I saw of El Paso, I'm sure this was not shot in El Paso, but they actually captured El Paso pretty well. We drove through El Paso on the way moving Eric out to Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And a couple of the shots in this movie, I was like, that kind of does look like that restaurant we went to in El Paso.
That's so funny.
Yeah.
I mean, I've driven through El Paso once as well. I think we stayed overnight in El Paso once and, we got in at 3 a.m. and we left at 8 o'clock in the morning. So see you later, El Paso. I mean, El Paso also home of a couple of my favorite bands.
Oh.
At the Drive-In and the Mars Volta, both based out of El Paso, Texas, with the combo of Cedric Bixler Zavala and Omar Rodriguez Lopez, who are also the Beto guys.
So wait, are those guys both in both of those bands?
Yes, they're both in both of those bands. And I believe it was... Omar Rodriguez Lopez, who played in a band with Beto before at the Drive.
Right. Right. Yes. Beto O'Rourke, also a University of, or a Texas El Paso person.
I don't
know if he actually went to UTEP.
He grew up in El Paso is his deal.
And was the mayor of El Paso, maybe?
That's an answer I don't have.
Or I wonder if he's just the...
He was, I think he was like a state senator and then he became a house rep.
Right. So this was a Disney movie too. I didn't realize.
Yes.
He was on El Paso City Council.
Yeah. Which makes him, he was the mayor for one part of his term because that's how a lot of city councils do it.
What did you think of this movie?
I think that this movie is just a perfectly fine sports movie where they go through and they solve a couple of problems and they learn how to become a team. And, you know, that's just like what, you know, it was fine. I didn't think there was anything that like made it stand out among like sports movies. You know, like if I'm comparing this to The Way Back, which is, you know, ostensibly another story about a coach who's coming in and turning a moribund team into a bunch of winners. The Way Back has an interesting and different kind of story to it that kind of separates it out from just we're just a college team just trying to win and solve racism. Like, you know, if this was Remember the Titans 2, you know, I don't think anyone would have batted an eye. Like, here's the difference is that both of those stories like actually happened. Like both of these are real stories.
Mm-hmm.
But they just feel, you know, especially with the way the movie was made, they just feel like a story that was made up for the movie. So, you know, with that feeling, it didn't particularly feel super authentic. It didn't feel like what happened in the movie was anything other than just like, oh, hey, we're doing this thing.
Right.
Yeah. Was it enjoyable? Did I enjoy myself when I watched this movie the first time and when I watched it this time? Sure. But I'm not going to sit here and be like, that movie changed my life. That movie was an amazing movie. It was just like perfectly fine, acceptable movie about the first team in NCAA history to win a championship with all black players.
Yes. I did not like this movie. this movie sucks. And I just think there are, for the same feeling, there are a lot of other movies that do this job better.
Yeah.
Especially if you're just going to be a by the numbers, like really kind of phone it in sports movie.
Yeah.
There's probably like 30 other movies. There's probably 10 other basketball movies that do this and probably 30 other sports movies in general.
Yeah.
I do want to recommend a movie called McFarlane USA. I think I mentioned this. It's about track runners in California, and it's very, very similar, but way better. So there are just a lot of, okay, what can I say? So this movie looks really good. I will say that. I think the production design and the cinematography and all that is quite good. And it's because I looked up the director. This is the only movie the director, James Gartner, has ever directed.
Oh,
and never did again. So, and he comes, I guess, from the world of commercials, which makes sense because it just looks really good.
Yeah.
One thing I noticed that they definitely took care to do was a lot of the basketball scenes kind of look like old footage of college basketball.
Yes. Yeah, they definitely
did. They have that camera angle from a point of view, and it kind of just looks like the way that those guys kind of look like they're just dribbling the ball like vertically, like around, running around.
Yeah.
It has that feeling a lot. So kudos to that. Yeah, good production design. I thought the acting was okay.
Yeah.
But I think this movie explains to me why Josh Lucas has never really become a big star.
Yeah.
Because he's very good looking. He's pretty charismatic, I guess, but he's kind of dead behind the eyes. Like, I never got a sense of like what he was really about in this movie.
Well, so he was about, you know, defensive basketball. You know, that's the, that's the whole thing.
It felt very boilerplate, his whole performance. Like, I never, and I don't know if this is the fault of the screenwriting or what, but like, I just never had any real sense of like, what does he care about? What does he drive? What is driving him beyond here is a basketball technique I can rant about, you know?
Yeah.
I thought that the basketball in the movie was pretty good until the very end of the Kentucky final was ridiculous.
Yeah. Yes.
So there's a player on the team called David Lattin
who
I looked up. He ended up playing, I think, 7 or 8 years for the San Francisco Warriors.
Yeah. Yes.
So he was a very good player. And I believe it's in the final game of the tournament. He tells them like, just go dunk it no matter what, just to intimidate them.
Yeah.
By the way, that mirrors the thing that John Thompson told Patrick Ewing to do in a final against the North Carolina Tar Heels.
Yeah.
He told him like just block the first like three shots no matter what. And it like that game started with like two goaltends by Patrick Ewing. So in this one, it's funny, that very first thing is like he goes down and just slams it on them. And I was like, oh, this is kind of ridiculous, right? And then you can find footage of the entire Texas Western Kentucky NCAA final on YouTube.
Yeah.
And you can watch the whole thing yourself. And he actually does, it's not the very first play, but it's like the third play. He yams it on them.
Yeah, like, he yams it right on Pat Riley. He yams it on Pat Riley.
Yeah. So in the real world, he really did that. And it really kind of looks like the same way it does in the movie.
Yeah.
But that in the movie, the game ends with this like off the backboard bounce and one alley hoop.
Yes.
And that nothing like near that happens in the real game.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
that for me, it just went to this like, what are we doing here?
Okay. That's fair. They put a little bit of extra excitement in at the end, which was definitely inauthentic. But you know, I mean, they fictionalized parts of everybody's stories and, you know, they tried to make something that was like a movie for kids that could talk about, you know, I don't know. I like my expectations for this movie are not so high that I think I could have been disappointed.
Well, I think for me, my expectations go up when you start to use race as like your defining plot point for a movie.
Yeah.
Because then I feel like the times that when you fudge history or you manipulate what happened to make your point actually kind of hurt the case sometimes.
So I guess what I don't know is what they manipulated other than like some basketball stuff. Like, did they manipulate the incident in the I didn't do the research.
I didn't do the. So I guess what I feel like it. Oh, so for example, I'm not sure how I feel about how they dealt with this, but there's a scene in it where one of the white kids is like, we're the minority now. Like, do you know how hard it is for us to be on the team with you guys? And it's sort of responded to by one of the players, but then Josh Lucas's character is kind of like, hey, everybody shut up. It's a little bit, it feels like a movie from like 2005 in a way, where a white player gets to do a whole monologue where he puts voice to the fact that really, like, it's just as tough for them as it is for the black players. And it's not really shut down in the way that I think it would be today. Like, today, I think it would just be like, oh, you need to stop talking. Like, you are not coming from this nearly at the same direction as these black players are.
Yeah, definitely.
And it's given a little more voice in this movie that I was uncomfortable with.
Yeah, that's absolutely fair. Turns out that, do you remember when they had the racial epithets drawn in their room?
Yes.
That event never took place. And at East Texas State, they did not get run off the court with popcorn and drinks.
Well, so like, I'm distrustful of almost all of these movies these days if they use race in this way. Yeah. Because like the Hidden Figures movie with, I think it was Octavia Spencer maybe and Viola Davis. I can't remember who was in the movie. Yeah. You know, that's a movie where Kevin Costner played a white guy who did not exist, who was kind of like their savior and got them in. And one thing I liked in that movie but didn't happen was that these African-American women helped safely launch this like rocket into space. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the movie, they're allowed into the room to kind of like watch the takeoff or whatever. I forget. They're kind of like allowed into like mission control or something.
Yeah.
In that movie. And in real life, they were not. In real life, they were like they were excluded from going into that room.
Yeah.
And I think that, sure, it wouldn't have felt good, but it would have been a pretty bracing statement about the realities of being African-American and a woman in science.
Yeah.
To have that be the ending of your movie. You know, I know that Hollywood is kind of like, no, we can't possibly have that be the ending. But there's something to me that's like artistically admirable about, hey, maybe there even was like a white savior dude who helped them, or a white coach who helped these guys a little bit. But like, it doesn't make it all okay by the end. And yeah. So I always have a little bit of like just reservations about this when, you know, for as many times as racism has been solved by sports and movies, it's weird that we still have it in real life.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. It's very funny on Wikipedia under the sea also, for the film Glory Road, there's 2006 in film, because that's when this movie came out. There's the 1965-66 Texas Western Miners basketball team, the 1966 NCAA University Division basketball championship game, list of sports films, and white savior narrative in film.
By the way, Hidden Figures starred Taraji P. Henson, not Viola Davis. So I'll just send myself an email saying that I'm racist as well.
Okay.
Okay. There's also a lot of basketball fudging in this movie.
Yeah.
So first of all, by the way, I highly recommend everybody watch that final game on YouTube. It's fascinating. Basketball is not as good as you would kind of hope. Like, there's actually a lot of odd turnovers. Also, they definitely have some different definition of what traveling is than we have, because they're called for traveling multiple times where I'm like, I don't even know what that call was.
Yeah.
There's the commentators are racist in their color commentary.
Oh shit. Because
even at the end of the game, when the game wasn't that close at the end, like they actually won by, I think, like 9 points or something.
Yeah.
So for the last 2 minutes, it's like not even that close. Although Bobby Joe Hill does steal the ball right at the very end. It's very cool.
Yeah.
By the way, Bobby Joe Hill is like a turnover machine. like constantly turning it over.
Was it so wrong of Coach Haskins to ask him to stop playing like an asshole?
Exactly. but the commentators are like, Like, these guys are about to win the national championship, and they're like, well, you know, these guys are such a disorganized team. They're just playing willy-nilly however they want to do. It's like, it's really terrible.
That's embedded racism. That's so ridiculous.
So anyway, that was, they actually won the championship in 1966. That was Haskins' fourth year coaching at Texas Western.
So
I just thought that was an interesting change. Also, they were the first team to start five black players. I believe there were multiple teams though that had started four before. But then I, in my reading about this, there also was a stereotype that you always needed one white player to lead the team.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we've seen parallels to this in like NFL quarterbacking as well. That you need to have a white player be like the brains of the operation.
Mm-hmm.
So luckily we, you know, luckily Texas Western won this game. And I mean, at least in basketball, that doesn't seem like a thing anymore. I hope that I'm right about that. You know, I mean, I hope that there aren't a bunch of like back channel conversations like at draft time about that kind of thing. That would be very depressing.
But, yeah.
I guess at least in the NBA, I feel like there are a significant amount of at least coaches and decision makers like GMs and stuff that are African-American or African, like Maasai. So hopefully they are not having this conversation. I just cringe at the idea of some of the owners coming around and having those thoughts.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know. Oh, and then the last thing I will say about this movie in terms of one thing that really bugged me. They make this weird choice to have really the arc of the mini narratives that happen in the basketball games just narrated by the color commentators or the play-by-play guys.
Yeah.
And there are significant moments that happen in the game where you don't even hear what Josh Lucas says to a player as he's pulling him off the bench to go into the game. You just see them. It's like, I think they're going for a documentary style.
Yeah.
But to me, the effect is that the play-by-play guy is like the main character in the last 30 minutes of this movie. So there is a very big moment when a player that has a medical condition that he's absolutely said, like, I cannot let you play. If you play, you might die, and I cannot have that on my conscience.
Yes.
And at a pivotal moment in one of the games, he, like, I believe it's against Kansas, he inserts this player, and there's no scene there at all. He just is like, oh, looks like he's – and the play-by-play guys are saying things that, like, I don't think
– We weren't expecting Cager to play today.
Yeah, I mean, it seemed like he had a heart problem and was going to die. And that's the extent of that moment, which I think – could have or should have been a more like a bigger moment.
Well, narratively, the moment narratively in that scenario, I don't mean to just go and defend the film the whole time, but like that moment narratively is when his mom begs Haskins to put him in the game.
Yes, true.
That's where they did that. Like, I think it could have been handled a little more effectively, but I think you know, when he says, you know, hey, you're going in, I think they were trying to show like the understated way in which Haskins tried to like connect with his players. I don't know.
I think I can see a version of that moment filmed like that, but there's not even a moment where like they make eye contact and Cager's like, yeah, it's my moment. Like we don't even get that.
That's fair.
By the way, there's a moment in some other game. So early on in the movie, Josh Lucas tries to recruit some player, and the guy's like, ugh, I'm not going to your school. I want to win. And then later they play that team, and the play-by-play guy is like, I forgot what that guy's name is, like Williams. Like, Williams is in the game. And of course, you know, Coach Haskins could have had him if he had just been able to recruit him correctly. Like, it's ridiculous.
You know, every color commentary guy in you know, I don't know if you know this, but color commentary and like play-by-play guys will sit down with like the coaches of the teams.
Yes, and, I do know this, yes.
So, you know, I think that's probably something that didn't happen for this game in real life.
But I'll bet when they were like storyboarding it or whenever they were writing the movie, they were like, oh yeah, he'd know that because he would have said that in the pregame media scrum. It's like,
right.
Yeah, this pregame media scrum for this Eastern Texas versus Western Texas barn.
You know, I think what it is that, oh, but yeah, that's what's funny too, is that player is like, I want to go somewhere I can win. So I'm going to go to East Texas State Technical College or whatever.
Yeah.
I think to me what it felt like is that they wrote a lot of this movie in the play-by-play. Like,
yeah.
They like structured a lot of this movie. They kind of had a bunch of footage and was like, okay, how do we connect this stuff? So we don't have a scene where in the shoot around, Josh Lucas walks up to that player and is like, hey, good luck. And he's like, you know, we are reminded of the fact that he tried to recruit him at one point and the player says something snotty.
Yeah.
You know, we don't have that scene. So let's just put it in the play-by-plays dialogue and we'll get it across that way. And that to me, a lot of the most dramatic basketball moments in this movie felt like that. Like,
yeah.
We're just sort of laying it across the top of footage we have of a game.
Yeah, that's pretty wild. How many sappy sports movies do you think that Jerry Bruckheimer has produced?
Do you have a list in front of you?
I do have a list.
Okay, first of all, I want to say that Eric and I just finished watching The Amazing Race Season 1.
Okay.
Which is a Jerry Bruckheimer production.
Oh, great. So this is Jerry Bruckheimer week for you.
Yes. Also, there's moments in The Amazing Race where they I swear to God, in 2 seconds, there are like 31 shots. Like, it's crazy. Okay. How many do I think he's produced?
Yeah.
I'm going to say 12.
12. Okay. I've got 3.
Oh, okay.
It's Remember the Titans. Got,
okay, which I have not seen.
Glory Road.
Uh-huh.
And then this one, well, the third one.
Tell me what sport it is.
You don't know what Remember the Titans is?
Remember the Titans is football.
Yeah, great. Glory Road is basketball.
Right.
And then there's only baseball. One other one that has to do with sports.
Is it baseball?
It is not. Oh, sorry. The sport is racing.
Oh, Days of Thunder?
Days of Thunder. That's correct. Yeah.
By the way, I've never seen that. Is that a feel-good movie?
I would say that it is not a feel-good movie in the same way, but it is a Bruckheimer like sports action movie with like you know, a little bit of some drama. You know, these ones are ostensibly dramas, and you know, the two are a little more family friendly than Days of Thunder is, but
I was thinking while we were watching The Amazing Race, I couldn't pick Jerry Bruckheimer out of a lineup. I don't have any idea what he looks like.
Oh.
I don't really have any sense of him as a personality in any way. Like, don't know if I've ever seen him interviewed. But it's interesting that I can say it's a Jerry Bruckheimer thing, and I have a picture of, like, what kind of cinematic experience it is. So I actually think that's kind of an achievement, that he has, like, this voice that is, like, because is he also Transformers movies?
No, he is not the Transformers movies. He is the Pirates of the Caribbean movies, the National Treasure movies.
Okay.
the Bad Boys movies.
Wait, isn't that Transformers then?
No, because he's not, he does not produce the Transformers movies.
Oh, wait, who directed that? Who directed Bad Boys?
That's Michael Bay.
Michael
who
Bay,
did,
okay.
Who so, did direct the first Transformers.
So these guys are like buddies, I believe.
Yeah.
Because, and also Michael Bay, again, I don't know who he is or whatever, you know, like couldn't tell you what he looks like, but I do have a sense of like, I actually feel like Michael Bay and Bruckheimer in my mind cinematically are very similar.
Yeah.
Because I just remember that there's footage in Transformers from Bad Boys.
That's so funny.
Have you seen that clip?
No, I mean, I did not watch Transformers. I had the Transformers movie on Blu-ray, and I fell asleep while watching it. That's how much I hate it.
There's a clip where they're chasing somebody, and they turn into robots, or the big robots, and they're going down like an LA freeway. Yeah. And it's the same, it's literally the same footage from Bad Boys with like CGI on top.
That's so funny. It's so funny.
I've heard very good things. In fact, while reading about this movie, I heard a lot. Just watch Remember the Titans is what I read.
Yeah. Remember the Titans feels like this movie. Exactly. Like they feel like the same exact movie.
Uh-huh.
It's just Remember the Titans is pretty good, but like, I don't know. I haven't watched Remember the Titans in a while, but I think it had a lot more memorable characters. Like, in in Glory Road, Dave Haskins' wife, who's just there to go like, whoa.
Oh yeah. That wife character is not good.
Not good. I just don't know what to do with all these death threats.
Yeah.
Okay.
By the way, it's the same footage in Transformers 3. Is somehow I got this twisted, but the same footage in Transformers 3 is in The Island.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so you telephoned that in your brain for a number of years before you let it out on the podcast. That's so funny.
Yes. Was The Island directed by Michael Bay? It was. And that's like a science fiction-y movie, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Never seen it. I don't know if I would recommend this movie. Derek Luke's pretty good in it.
Yes, I agree.
I feel like the guys playing the players are all pretty good.
Yeah.
It's weird when you watch a movie and you just know how it's gonna end. I mean, I didn't know that they won the championship. I was actually pleased that they won I actually thought it was gonna be a, like, we went to the tournament and won one game.
Yeah.
What an achievement, which would be an achievement. And actually, I know that a lot of my instincts are not what people want to see in movies, but like, to me, a story about him going to a team that was terrible,
yeah,
and taking them in his first year to the NCAA tournament and winning one game, to me, would be amazing.
Yeah.
Okay, they didn't do that.
No.
In his third year, they got to the second round, though.
But I guess here's the question. How many teams were in the tournament back then?
Oh, that's true. I think it's like 32.
It was less than 32. It was like 26 all the teams that were allowed back then or something like that. I remember looking it up. Cause like they were, you know, ostensibly at the end of this movie, the number two team in the nation, but they, they had to play, in the first round and there was 1, 2, 3, 4 rounds. And then there were teams that had byes because there weren't enough teams to fill out the rest of the bracket.
Right.
Okay. So the national championship was incredibly diluted back in the day.
Or you could say the talent was, I mean, you could argue that's diluted with more teams too.
Yeah, that's right.
Now his first year in Texas Western, they went 18-6.
That's like, pretty good.
That's incredible. I think if they were truly as bad as they say they were, well, funny, yeah, if, like, you looked up their real record before the year before, they were like 20-5. You
know? I mean, it seems like he recruited a lot of these players too, because when they were playing in the championship, a lot of them were seniors. Like a lot of these players who played for UTEP had been with the team for a while, like in the real team.
Right.
It kind of makes sense to have like, well, we don't want to show the 4 years of this happening, but we do want to narratively just show it happening in 1 year because, you know, we only have 90 minutes to make this movie.
Yeah. Interesting. So I'm looking at the roster for the team that won the championship.
Yeah.
And, it does seem like he recruited them all except for the two white guys.
Yeah.
So, for example, Willie Cager in the team that won the championship, he's a sophomore. So yeah. Haskins definitely recruited him. However, Cager, Bobby Joe Hill, David Latin, and Willie Worsley are not the same. They're not all in the same year. So he recruited them over like 2 years, basically. So it's still an achievement, but it's not like he went around in 3 months and like assembled this team that just went right to win the championship.
No, definitely. But anybody who was a senior then would have been recruited by him as a freshman in his, because he would have been there for long enough to have recruited all of the people on this team.
Yeah, actually, in this, it was his fifth season. So, yes. And they ended the season, before the tournament, as the number three team in the country.
Yeah. It's very funny. If you look at the you look at that national championship that year, they were the number three team. But if you take a look at the teams, there were only six teams per region and only five teams in the Midwest. And they were they had to play in the bracket. They had to play in the first round to play in against Oklahoma City because Cincinnati was better than them that season.
Actually, while I was sort of browsing around, Cincinnati has been like a good team for like a long time.
Yeah.
Because I forgot, is it Bob Huggins was like a Cincinnati coach?
Yes, I remember. He was.
And to me, I remember being like, oh, I've never heard of the Cincinnati team. And then you look in history and it's like, oh, no, they actually have a long legacy of like being a top national team.
Yeah.
I will note that in movies like this, I would say in the first 30 minutes of Glory Road, I was like, this movie's pretty good and I'm enjoying the basketball. And then I was like, I almost wish that this would just stay a basketball movie. Every time they would go like when they decided to go out on the town and dress up,
or they went to the party,
scenes like that in these movies, I'm always just like, I really want to skip this scene. I almost want just a silent movie titled card that just tells me like, what is the salient plot point that I need from this scene? Like, what's the thing that, like, if it was just a thing that just says like, they go to a diner, he gets beat up in the bathroom.
Yeah.
Done. Like, I don't know why I just, these scenes in particular in these kind of movies, I'm just really, I don't know, bored by in a way.
Yeah.
I will point out one thing that's race related that they did kind of fudge was at the very end of the movie. They said that Adolph Rupp, who was played by John Voight, recruited like his first black player, like in 1972 or whatever.
Yeah.
After this, that is true, but in his entire career, he only recruited one black player. Like the one that they mentioned in the end titles is the one. That's it. He never did again. So in the entire Adolph Rupp Kentucky basketball history, he recruited one black player the entire time. So it wasn't like it was kind of presented like he had a little bit of a change of heart after this game.
Yeah.
And he did not.
It was very funny to watch John Voight in that movie as that role, because you know John Voight is just thinking that stuff. Like, he's like, I'm the hero of this movie because I didn't let any of these black players on my team.
Right. Right. That was weird knowing how much of a conservative, horrible person he is. And also that it looked like he was on Star Trek with his nose makeup. But I'm glad we saw it. I have always rooted for Josh Lucas as an actor. There's something about him that I like a lot. Or it's like you know what? Josh Lucas is like, help me come up with a comp, as they say. A basketball player that has all the tools, but just doesn't seem to have the internal fire or drive.
Oh, Jeff Green.
He's the Jeff Green.
He's the Jeff Green. Yeah, you just described Jeff Green. So I guess we'll apply it to Josh Lucas.
Josh Lucas is the Jeff Green of acting.
Right, because Jeff Green's got all the tools. He's just never put it together.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, for somebody as... Honestly, I would say I don't find him attractive, but you have to admit that classically, Josh Lucas is very handsome.
Yeah, he's a handsome. He's not like a I'm so hot guy, but he's like a, you know, this is like a handsome man.
Put it this way, he's I would say he's as handsome as like Patrick Wilson.
Yeah, he's got Patrick Wilson vibes. He's also got Patrick Dempsey vibes.
Right, and I would say both of them have probably made more interesting acting choices. And I would almost say that he's sort of in the for given his tools, he's about where Jeff Green is as well, like in their respective industries.
I mean, I don't know about that. So Josh Lucas has made 2 films a year, basically every year since 2002, right? Yeah. 2007, he skipped a year. And then 2015, he skipped a year. And that's it. And then every other year, there's at least 2 movies that he's made since 2000. He's right. just been in so much stuff. And
Jeff Green has made 2 3-pointers a year. Every year.
And I mean, I guess you can't say something. Jeff Green's always on a new team every year. And Josh Lucas never does sequels. So,
yeah. Well, put it this way. In a movie like Ford versus Ferrari, which I have not seen, but Josh Lucas is in. I have no idea. You have?
Yes.
How big is his role?
His role is pretty big. He's a foil in the movie. Okay. He does not believe in the racing team. And at Ford, he's like, no, we don't like this racing team. We're going to do whatever we can to stop this racing team from being good.
Mm-hmm. I guess if Glory Road had like catapulted him into true like lead territory,
okay,
he'd be one of the leads in Ford versus Ferrari.
Yeah, if this movie that would in no way was going to vault him to top lead status had done that, then yes.
But what like, I mean is Glory Road is his shot at it. Like
he's one of the leads in Sweet Home Alabama.
I have not seen that. Is that Reese Witherspoon?
Yeah, it's a Reese Witherspoon movie. Reese Witherspoon. He was the lead in Stealth, you know, the movie about the stealth fighter jets. He was the lead in Telltale.
I guess what I'm saying is that Glory Road is like whenever Jeff Green got his chance to be like a starter.
Yeah.
And you're just kind of like, oh, he doesn't have it. He's not a starter. He's a good, you know,
What about Stolen?
He played
Charles Lindbergh in J. Edgar, the J. Edgar Hoover movie.
Right, which means he's just like he's like a Jeff Green of that movie.
Okay.
He's never I would be curious to see where he was on the call sheet in the last 10 years. Stolen is that a sequel to Taken?
He was the number 2 in Breakthrough, that terrible Christian movie about the kid who got trapped in the water and Chrissy Metz sang him back to life with the power of Jesus and going viral.
Oh, is that where that song came from?
Maybe. Yeah, actually,
because
yes.
She sang a song on the Oscars.
Yeah, I think it was that song.
And I remember she's got a great voice. And I remember just thinking, like, what movie is this from?
Yeah.
I feel like Breakthrough is not a movie I should add to my queue.
No. Dear God, no.
But you know what? It is quarantine time, which means all of our lists of the movies we're going to watch are very skewed right now.
That's true. I have actually a new thing to add to a list of yours, which okay. I don't know if you are aware of this or not, or maybe even if I brought it up before. But I was scrolling through Twitter and somebody had a story that they had written about the NFL draft and what someone was going to be doing to prepare for the draft or something. And yes. It showed me a picture of the New York Jets general manager, their new general manager that they hired. And so if you just search Jets GM, I think this guy is a Chris Grace kind of guy.
Let's see. Because, you know, the Jets used to have Eric Mangini, who was definitely on it.
Yes.
GM Joe Douglas. Yes, definitely. Yes.
Yeah. I was like, 100%. I knew it.
100%.
Yeah, we've...
Is this a former player?
I don't know.
Seems like he must be, right?
Yeah, Joe Douglas. Let's see.
Eric Mangini was very adorable.
Yeah.
And also, for a while, I think I mentioned this before, Marty Morningwig from the Detroit Lions.
Yeah.
I still don't really care about football, but it does not seem like he was a pro player, was he?
No, he was not. No, he played FCS ball for Richmond, and then he became a scout in for the Baltimore Ravens.
Well, that's interesting and cool, and I wish him luck, even though the Jets seem like one of those organizations that is tough to root for.
Yes, yeah.
But also, I think it's cool when people make it – I think it's cool when non-players make it up the ranks from being like a scout or something to being someone high up.
Yeah, absolutely.
I feel like that's like a Spoelstra, Jeff Van Gundy type path.
Spoelstra, the new coach of the Memphis Grizzlies is also that way.
Uh-huh.
I think Atlanta Hawks coach is too, Lloyd Pierce.
I just wanted to point out a couple things. Oh, I just listened to a video interview between it's on Kevin Durant's YouTube channel.
Okay.
Between Bob Myers, the GM of the Golden State Warriors, and whoever Kevin Durant's buddy is. I don't know who that guy is.
Kevin Durant's buddy, Rich Kleiman.
You know how like wait, spell his last name?
Kleiman.
Let me look at him and see if it's him. Yes, it is Rich Kleiman. Who's Rich Kleiman?
He's an American sports agent.
Is he like his manager or something?
Yeah, he's Kevin Durant's agent slash like business partner.
Okay, so it's an interview between Rich Kleiman and Bob Myers, and it's actually pretty interesting. Worth watching if you care about Bob Myers type perspective. And then the last thing I want to throw out was that David Lattin has from Glory Road, his grandson is in the G League.
Oh,
and not only that, if you go look up college basketball highlights for, I forget what his name is, something Latin, L-A-T-T-I-N. He's a kind of big power forward. His highlights are all of him blocking shots, basically.
Yeah.
But while I'm watching these highlights, I'm like, oh, that's Trae Young on his team. So the guy from Glory Road, his grandson, is a college teammate of Trae Young's.
Wow. Playing at Oklahoma. That's wild. Yep. That's so funny.
And it is fun to watch Trae Young in college. Because he's doing the same stuff he does in the NBA, but against lesser competition.
those first flipping like 15 games of his at Oklahoma when he went crazy. So
yes. Good. Yeah. Do you want to pick a movie for next week?
Yes. I've picked the last movie. So do you have one for me?
Yes. I have one to patch up a hole in my cultural knowledge.
There we go.
Which is necessary to patch up my basketball knowledge.
Okay.
But also for the sheer number of time, if we ever have improv again, which of course we won't be having in New York City now.
Yes, that's correct.
If I ever do an improv show again, it won't be that long before this movie comes up as a thing that everybody references that I don't know about.
Well, I'm just going to take one stretch, one long stretch, and guess what you're going to say.
What is it?
It's Space Jam.
Yes, it's Space Jam. So especially in tribute to, since this is Michael Jordan week, apparently.
It's going to be Michael Jordan month and 1 week. They've got 10 episodes that they're releasing two every Sunday.
Good Lord.
Yeah.
You know what actually gives me hope though, is that this means that 6 months to a year from now, there's going to be some like 12 part Kobe thing.
Yeah.
So that would be something to look forward to. So yeah, Space Jam is my pick. It comes up, I would say, in one out of every 20 improv shows, which is pretty high occurrence rate.
Oh yeah,
and I've never seen it, so I think we should watch it this week.
There we go. We're in. It's Space Jam time.
Now, I'm sure I have no idea where it's streaming. It must be streaming somewhere.
I think it's on Netflix. So,
okay.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Space Jam is on Netflix.
It is indeed on Netflix. And you know what? For me, an 85% match.
Wow. I could have never guessed.
Netflix really thinks I'm going to like this movie.
Oh, it's only a 75% match for me. I'm probably not going to like this movie.
So, yeah.
I love that the cast on Netflix is Michael Jordan, Bugs Bunny, and Wayne Knight. Truly, you're in for a treat here, Chris.
Oh, boy. All right, so Space Jam is our next movie. Casey, do you have any shows coming up this week?
I don't know if anybody is willing to do this, but I've been playing Dungeons & Dragons. So if you want to play Dungeons & Dragons or like watch people play it, that sounds like such a boring time. No shows.
Wait, are you actually doing any like D&D Zoom?
I mean, we're doing it over Roll20 and a Discord channel. So it's like,
okay,
you know, we're playing online.
By the way, how are you finding that platform?
How am I finding Roll20 or Discord?
Yes,
Roll20. I mean, here's the thing. This is the first time I've ever played Dungeons & Dragons. So I don't have a good like, I got 10 years of experience playing with my buddies in a basement, and it just does not measure up. I don't have it. It seems like it's fine to do what my DM wants to do. So seems like it's working.
Cool. I am not, you know, a week or two ago, I could have actually pointed you some. Oh, actually, I can plug one thing, which is that I am a part of a thing called the Fusebox Festival.
Oh.
Which I believe if you go to fuseboxfestival.com, this is a arts festival in Austin, Texas that happens every year. It's a live theater performance festival, but they are going completely virtual this year, and they have asked to use some of the songs that I wrote in their festival, and they actually commissioned a couple of new songs for me as well. They'll be making their debut.
And these are the kinds of songs that you've been writing and performing with your buddy and like you doing the multiple vocal tracks and stuff?
Yes, yes.
Awesome. Those have been very funny.
Yeah, and they'll be at fuseboxfestival.com. So basically they're going to stream a scheduled series of programs, and my songs are kind of like the little palate cleansers between some of them.
Yeah.
So that's where you can catch me this week, fuseboxfestival.com. They're streaming that from Friday, April 24th to Sunday, April 26th.
Amazing. I love it.
I think that's it for me.
Great. Hey, catch you on the 30th.
Yeah, we'll see you on every date ending with a zero.
Except for today, just because of the power at your house yesterday.
Yeah, I didn't have any electricity for a couple hours yesterday.
Brutal.
So watch Space Jam, and we'll see you next time, guys.
All right. See you.